What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the FPN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, recording on Tuesday the evening, May the 2nd. And, you know, May the 4th be with you soon, I guess, maybe by the time you're listening to this. I am Vlad Sedler. You can find me on Twitter at RotoGut. And I'm with my co-host, Matthew Davis. He's at MattyWood on Twitter. Matt, what's going on, bro?
Going to do my best to stay up late this evening so I can watch the Lakers game. I'm very excited, as you may know. And the listeners, although it is not a live recording, we are going to be doing a bit of a pre-gaming as we are recording because I am pumped up and we are in playoff mode. But we will be focusing on baseball this evening. And I'm excited for our topics that we have. You asked me to send to you my rest of season top 10 starting pitchers. So that kind of perked my ears up this earlier today when I saw what we were going to be talking about a little bit and talking about some rookie pitching, some that have been called up and a lot more. So good times up ahead and I'm thankful to be here.
Yeah, sports, it's interesting, the progression of people, right? Like, you know, the periods in your life where maybe you may be into some sports more than others. And of course, I think a lot of people are listening that are listening are diehards. I'm sure a percentage of them play fantasy football. I'm sure a small percentage are like anti-football, right? When they start seeing us tweeting in July about, you know, like our draft boards for football and stuff, they're like, oh, you know, eye roll and stuff. And then the other sports, of course, I mean, you know, everyone's into different things, but I was telling you before the show, like I was the biggest Lakers, LA Kings guy growing up. I grew up playing hockey. You know, I think baseball and hockey were always my top sports. Football never really had a team, kind of like the Raiders, but it was just, you know, it was more fantasy for me, I guess, in my teens and 20s. But the Lakers, man, like since Kobe died, just haven't really been into them. I was telling you that I had to look at the actual roster to see who is on the Lakers. And it's funny because this time last year I was providing actually like good NBA DFS content. I was, you know, part of the, you know, the NBA team and you know, kind of subbing in here and there. And when you're in the zone and you're following really closely, it's a lot of fun. And NBA DFS, for example, is just a ton of fun. But it's just so funny how removed I am from that. And I think that corresponds with me really just kind of have like my ass lit for lighting myself up for wanting to just have a really killer season in baseball and wanting to provide subs with just the best possible content. So I'm just like fully focused in baseball right now. Like it's insane how much I've never loved baseball and fantasy baseball like I do right now.
I definitely feel like I am grinding, you know, morning to till I go to sleep with the baseball, sounding like a boomer. So I'm with you on that. But I tweeted earlier today, so San Francisco and Los Angeles, you know, Dodgers, Giants, huge rivalry, obviously. A lot of history there. And now we have the Lakers and Warriors. So we're not really used to seeing that. I know that we've seen LeBron and Steph Curry when LeBron was with the Cavaliers, and we've seen those awesome matchups in the playoffs. But now it's the Lakers and the Warriors, and they haven't seen each other in the playoffs in over 30 years. And it's just, it's exciting. So
yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit of my attention will be towards that, but we will be done recording by then. So let's get on to the baseball.
Yeah. Let's talk some baseball here. And how do we not kick things off with the amazing news that Bryce Harper is making his MLB debut actually right around a little bit after we start recording here, a lot earlier than expected after Tommy John. I'm going to end up taking a big L on this one, most likely, right? Unless he gets hurt and misses half the year because he's not going to suck. It's Bryce Harper. He will have strings of periods of time. He could have, you know, 2 week stretches. It could be in the early, you know, starting today until, you know, for a couple of weeks where he's just ice cold and he'll go through some of those cold streaks. But at the end of the day, those that that spent under $10 for him in auction, those that got him after pick 200, I surely didn't expect this, wasn't planning on it, didn't get him in any underdog best balls as well. I was just a full fade on Bryce Harper. And man, I feel silly right now as he's making his debut with 5 months to go in the MLB season.
Yeah, Dave Roberts was shouting at him yesterday before the game during pregame warmups. He's like, you couldn't have waited 3 more days to rush back. He's like, what are you doing coming back all of a sudden? So very impressive. Kudos to the managers that were willing to go out on a limb to get him, whether it be as we got closer and closer to spring and the news was getting a little bit more optimistic. Wherever you did draft him, it's going to end up looking like it's going to be a positive ROI. Cheers.
Yeah, and actually the Phillies have been playing a lot better baseball lately. Not outside of like, you know, the individual fantasy performances, you know, if you recall, they started off losing five of their first six games. It basically got swept by the Rangers. And lately they've been picking up the pace. They've lost their last two games. Before that, they had won, I believe it was eight of their previous nine, including some tough opponents there, Seattle, Houston. So this is a nice little shot in the arm for them. I think it'll pick up for the other guys around there, right? I mean, Jeter Realmuto really isn't doing all that much other than stealing bases. He was even hitting lower in the lineup, but we will see, those little like victory laps I've been running in my head about not getting a second or third round Realmuto, even though I still don't think he's going to earn second or third round value, he's still going to be really solid. And at some point I won't be able to take those internal victory laps because he's going to be just fine, I think, along with most of this offense.
Yeah, the batting, you know, the spot in the lineup for JT or Realmuto, that kind of stings a little bit, as we've seen early on in this season. I think that could play a factor, obviously, in the overall total production and what he brings for if you look at Razzball Player Rater or if it's at the Baseball HQ, you know, rotisserie value, etc. That hurts if you're not hitting second, like we were seeing, or at the top, the top third of the Phillies lineup. And now that you get Bryce Harper, it's going to be interesting to see how things thicken out there. They were recently, before Harper coming into tonight, they were ranked 11th in ISO at 171. And then their WRC plus was at 106. So they were still a little bit above average, but to start off the season, they were a little bit cold. So they definitely will be turning a corner in the right direction, I think, even though they will be missing Rhys Hoskins.
The one part that I'm a little upset about is the Bryson Stott leadoff thing is pretty much over. He's hitting fifth in the lineup against the lefty Tuesday night, tonight when we're recording. But he's not going to be at the top of the lineup. Now that you've got Bryce Harper back and you need to be able to separate those lefties and righties, the ultimate ideal foursome at the top, it's Schwarber the lefty, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper the lefty, and then Nick Castellanos. So there's your first four. Then you can continue to break it up with a Bryson Stott at five, Realmuto at six, but at some point, you know, they can mess around with that. And then keep in mind, Brandon Marsh, who's hitting seventh, he's been hitting really well. So you can always flip. You can put Marsh fifth. I think that's a possibility. And then if you think about how, I guess, going into the season, how bad this lineup looked, now you're looking at a lineup with Alec Bohm hitting eighth. So this is they're 15-15 going into this game, but this might be a little bit of a dangerous team. They're not going to win the division. Braves are going to win this division, but they can make the playoffs. They can maybe even be better than the Mets.
I want to bet the Mets to win the East, but it's just so fucking hard to have any trust or faith in them. I mean, it's just continuously the LOL Mets, you know, over and over and over again. So
I can't do it, man, because, okay, so you've got already, I mean, you know, Braves are 19-10 to start, Mets are 16-13, really, no big deal. It's May. But it's the Braves, man, they're loaded. I mean, you got your minor league spot starter, Bryce Elder, like throwing gems. You've got this amazing rotation. You got, as long as Acuna's healthy there at the top of that lineup, I mean, they just got Harris back. This lineup is extreme. It's just, I don't know. I just, and with the Mets, it really all depends on Scherzer and Verlander, right? I mean, if they stay healthy and they stick around through the season, they'll be competitive. But if one of those guys go down or, you know, both again, that would be very problematic. But yeah, I think I pretty much would easily stick with the Braves to take this division down.
Hopefully JV and Max, right, starting tomorrow on, the Mets had a rainout today, but I think that was part of their plan when they designed activating Max Scherzer. So initially they said that he was going to be the starter on Tuesday, which is today, May 2nd. And then News came out yesterday on May 1st that Max wasn't going to start till Wednesday. So some fantasy managers I know that in some discords were a little unsettled about, oh, now we don't get the two-step with Max, et cetera. But it was because they were looking at the weather and they didn't want to ramp him up and then have him sit, et cetera. And then, you know, try and play that game, the yo-yo effect with him, especially because of what's gone on at the beginning of the season for him. So that was sort of a blessing in disguise, I think. And then he'll end up being a two-step next week, I think, if things follow suit. So
the one-step, the two-step, honestly, I think, I mean, as long as he's healthy.
It all works itself out, yeah.
Yeah, as long as he's healthy, he'll be fine. And originally, if you think back like Thursday, Friday, we were looking at a two-step this week with Monday being his original start date. They had the two rainouts over the weekend in that series against the Braves. So whatever. If he's healthy, he's good. We hope that that'll be the case. A few hitters recently promoted, or actually first, a couple of guys coming off the IL. Good timing for Harrison Bader coming back to this lineup that is currently missing Judge, missing Stanton. They're in quite the pickle. Judge is probably a minimum IL stint, but Harrison Bader, nice little mid-range guy if you have him. Obviously, you probably pop them in your lineup. And then the old forgotten Tyrone Taylor comes at a perfect time with Garrett Mitchell, unfortunately, likely out for the season with the shoulder issue. And I believe he just had surgery. Sal Frelick is out for a couple months. Joey Weimer really isn't getting it done. They had another guy, I forgot, Perkins, who I think got sent down. And so Tyrone Taylor is back. He, you know, got injured in the preseason. We all stopped drafting him. He's not available in a lot of leagues because he just wasn't drafted. So we'll see. This is a guy to keep an eye on, I think, this week because, if he does something at the plate, he's going to see some nice bids.
I noticed that I was looking for his ownership so I could bring that up to the listeners, but then I couldn't find him. So after tonight, he will be in the player pool tomorrow in the NFBC, if that's where you play. In other leagues, he's already available, so I'm assuming you can just go and pick him up, kind of see what you have there. They're at Coors, so the numbers could look really good in the next few days, which will, of course, obviously bump up the price by the end of the week. But yeah, he has a little bit of that power-speed combo that we like in a baseball player for fantasy sports. So,
yeah, he's a low-average guy. He's rather streaky. He hits lefties well. And he's one of those guys that I remember originally we were doing our projections in January, February. We were looking at a potential breakout here, a guy that could hit possibly 22, 25 bombs and steal 5 to 10 bases. So, so that'll be nice getting him back. Mikel Garcia, this is somebody that a lot of sharp people I know were kind of keeping him on the down low as far as somebody that we liked that could break out because Kansas City really needs some hitters. And this guy has been, he's been pretty solid. He's really fast. He stole, nearly 40 bases between double and triple A last season. Not all that much power, but he's really fast, really good plate patience so far in the minors this year in triple A, 14% walk rate, but Mikel Garcia is going to join the Royals. A corresponding move. They actually demoted Franmil Reyes. So that is unfortunate, the old Franimal thing is no longer a thing.
You mentioned the sharp player, you know, that they were into people. Garcia, I believe, is actually who you were talking about, Mikel Garcia, the rookie coming up with the Kansas City Royals playing third base, but you said sharp. I'm not part of that sharp player group, but we took the L tonight, and I did specifically in one of my Vegas main events with Yusei Kikuchi and Steven Matz. I know both of those players were part of the quote-unquote sharp pool this draft season. But for me, when it comes to evaluating a rookie player, I know that he's going to have – you'll be doing our fab piece at FTN Fantasy. So stay tuned to that to see what the bid ranges are going to look like. But for me – sure, the stolen base is great. I don't think that we need to be pressing for those as much as we used to for the new landscape that we're seeing and the success rate. So that's the first thing. The second thing is where he's going to be hitting in the lineup. Then you need to tack on the team context, Kansas City Royals. Then you need to look at park factor. So none of these things are really great, right? In the grand scheme of things. The one thing I do like is plate discipline. So he does take a little bit of walks and he doesn't strike out a ton. So high contact rate. Those are the things that I do like from a young player. But I'm not going to press for speed. And then I think that you're most likely going to be getting below average, you know, rest of season outlook. If we were talking about a projection system, when it comes to counting stats and runs and RBIs, I think that that's going to be below average. So for me, I'm most likely not going to be winning bids this upcoming weekend.
Yeah. So with him, I think one element is the middle infield and the fact that that's rather shallow and some of these Edmundo Sosa's of the world that we've been trying to tackle. I mean, I've been, you know, playing Jordan Diaz in a couple of my main events. Okay, you know, guy with literally no experience on the worst team in baseball. So there'll be a little value there. But you make a good point because this season with the different dynamic, you almost need to have some pop with your speed, because a lot you're competing against a lot of teams that have elements of both, right? I'm thinking back to one of my DCs where my offense is kind of short. Like I've got like Stanton and a whole bunch of other guys on IL, and I'm having to play Esturi Ruiz and Miles Straw together on the same team. And outside of a DC, which is, you know, draft and hold format, you kind of stuck with the roster that you have. That's not usually an advisable strategy, especially I think even this season. I mean, sure, you can get off to nice little stolen bases, but you really need to get the power balanced out like everywhere else. So in the case of Mikel Garcia, he's at least not going to be a zero, like a, you know, Billy Hamilton per se. Oh, ironically, was promoted by the White Sox today, actually. We'll talk about White Sox in a second, but so he's not an absolute zero, but, and he is their top prospect. So there's some good things, but you're right. You bring up some good points about team context. You don't really see him cracking the top four or five on that lineup. And you know, the ballpark sucks, the team sucks. So yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. That's just the reality. And then, you know, probability and success rates, et cetera. It's a lot to climb. And I think that people are going to see a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, good plate discipline, and it's off to the races we go again. I feel like every weekend we've been seeing 20 to 30% bids on at least one rookie, which is just absolutely insane. But hey, Tanner Bibee looked good tonight. Fucking A. So cheers.
Yeah, he got hit by a comebacker, I guess, and then
I saw that
velocity there in the sixth. He was kind of running out of gas, but still.
It wasn't his pitching hand, though, I will say. Yeah. And he wanted to stay in and did stay in. But yeah, it did kind of crumble after that.
And then the White Sox finally, sent down Oscar Colas. So that has been a nightmare so far. He's been absolutely horrible. He was pretty much only playing. He was basically platooned at this point. This entire White Sox offense is just a debacle. It's
a really fucking mess.
It's really a mess. Maybe Tim Anderson comes back and, you know, they gain a little bit of momentum here. I don't know what they're doing tonight, but yeah, it's right now. Yeah. Robert Jr. looks lost at the plate. This is just another lesson for me. So, again, I'm just like, I love these knuckleheads. I don't know what it is. It's that upside that, you know, you just know, what you can have if you get a kind of a full season, but his mayhem this weekend where, you know, he didn't. So remember, he got benched.
Yeah. I asked Brandy to fucking return the jersey from Luis Robert.
Wow. You did.
I was like, return my jersey. Send it back. I don't want this shit. Yeah,
it's just,
man.
It's a disappointment.
Tell the people if they didn't watch the video or see the game of Robert. Yeah, tell them. I'm sorry.
Well,
I cut you off there, but yeah.
I mean, we know that he didn't run out to first base. It would have easily been a single for him. He just kind of was, you know, lollygagging for the, you know, the second half of that run to first. But afterwards, there was some confusion if it was like injury related or was he benched. And turns out he was benched, but then he had complained about a hamstring tightening up, but he didn't tell the coaches beforehand, which is like, duh, bro. And then there's something else, and you always have to fact check things, right? Because you can't just see something on Twitter and just like retweet it and like, oh, I read something about like he didn't even know like the name of one of his coaches or pitching coaches. Like, bro, come on. I don't know. These type of things just kind of annoy me. I like my players to just be like, you know, like really
locked
care.
In and know everything and be dialed in. Yeah, it's giving me really bad Miguel Sano vibes. The
and a shit ton of strikeouts. Like every time I look, it's like 3 Ks, 2 Ks. Like he was great the first couple of weeks of the season, and he's just like looks completely lost.
The lineup does look a little bit better now that Tim Anderson and Eloy Jimenez, because they were on the IL at the same time at one point, they are back in the lineup. So that looks good. Luis Robert is in the lineup tonight. So that's good as well. So the top five of that lineup looks pretty strong right now. So maybe, just maybe, they get things going. Michael Kopech looked good tonight. Velocity was up again, sustaining 97. Good to see. Hitting 98. So he pitched well for the first time. They were down 2-0 against Joe Ryan, and then they ended up tying it. I'm trying to find out right now what they exactly did to tie it. But yeah, it's a 2-2 game right now. It's been a struggle for the White Sox on the South side, but maybe things look better now that Tim Anderson and Eloy Jimenez are healthy together at the same time. And maybe, just maybe, after getting benched one game for Luis Robert and then getting bumped, right? That's another thing. So he's not hitting third in the lineup tonight. He's hitting fifth. So Andrew Vaughn kind of surpassed him there. So Grifol, the manager, is trying to shake things up and show that he's the leader and the captain of, you know, this is his ship kind of thing. And, you know, so this is a little bit of a punishment for Luis Robert. And
he deserves it.
And they need to get their shit together. So,
by the way, I got a name for you. I know you know this because you're kind of on top of all the closers, but they obviously have a situation there. And our boy Ronaldo Lopez is not doing well. He's been giving up some runs and dealing with like an arm thing. But the rest of that pen hasn't looked really all that good. Kendall Graveman's been horrible. We know Liam Hendricks is back in a couple of weeks. But they did add Alex Colome. Obviously, I think he's dust. But it would just be so funny if he bridged the gap for the next couple of weeks until Hendricks is back. I doubt it. I doubt he's going to get in such high leverage situations. But there is a name that popped out to me. And this is a guy that is now moved up to the main setup man, high leverage guy in the White Sox on roster resource. His name is Gregory Santos, and I actually didn't really know all that much about him. He was a former Giants prospect, 23 years old, and so far he's got an ERA under 2. The dude shoves at 97 and 98 miles per hour in 14 innings. He has yet to give up a home run, and he's got a BABIP near 400. Despite, you know, basically still having an ERA under 2 and a strikeout rate of 25% and no barrels allowed either. This dude looks good. Maybe he's our like Nick Anderson, Yenny or Cano of the following week.
He potentially could be. Need them to bump him up in the usage index. But yes, he is their best reliever right now. There is no doubt about that. So good call on that.
So now a little bit about some of these young pitchers, because obviously that's like the only thing on our mind, right? And you can keep doing those, the distracted boyfriend meme for every week, right? I mean, you could do it every day, basically, over this last week. It's like, oh, Bybee, Brandon Pfaadt, Logan Allen, Gavin Stone, right? So you got all these young guys in the mix. You got Louis Varland, and now you've got Seattle. I think everyone knows, the Chris Flexen thing wasn't really working out in the rotation. They called up this kid, Easton McGee, and he pitched nicely in his first game, and he's hurt. He's on the IL. So now they've called up one of their top prospects, Bryce Miller. He'll be making his start, I believe, tonight, right? Tuesday night? Wednesday.
It is today, I believe.
Okay.
I believe.
So he's making his debut.
They're pitching in an hour, I think.
Yeah, so the prospect heads, you know, and Eric Cross, Jake Kuchek, these guys know who he is, I think, a lot more than you and I. But what we can see on paper, he has not pitched above double A. He was between high A and double A last season, pitched about 25 starts, had a nice solid ERA in the low threes, the strikeout rate right around 30%, walk rate around 8 or 9%. And then so far this season, only 4 starts, but basically he was not looking so good in double A. So basically had allowed 5 homers and 14 runs in 19 innings. So that gives you an ERA of 6.5. Strikeouts were way down as well, only around 21%. He'll be making his debut. And if he does well, he can stick around in the rotation because they need somebody.
Yeah, they do. And then some, there's kind of some funkiness going on with Logan Gilbert as well. That's been occurring. So kind of follow up with that. So he did throw over 120 innings last year. You mentioned that at the highest level that Bryce Miller reached for the Mariners was in Double A. But he is going tonight. I'm confirming that just because I was sounding uncertain. Which I was uncertain. It's Bryce Miller versus Mason Miller. So you're getting the battle of the rookie Millers. Yeah. Yeah. So you ever seen We Are the Millers?
Yeah. That's a great movie.
So funny.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it is.
Tonight we are the Millers.
Watch that with your family if you get a chance and you haven't seen it yet. For me, right, it takes me up to this point of, okay, they've been called up, and then it's looking into what can they do? What are the metrics? And then how many innings have they pitched last year? What is the team context? And then what is the sustainability? So is there a path to them staying up? And then if so, how many innings can they reach from here until end of the season? And then that will kind of gauge my bidding. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was talking, I don't remember who it was with. It might have been with you. Actually, last week we were talking about the Guardians, Bybee and Logan Allen. It was with you.
You talk to so many people. You've got your
own product. I know, right? So you and I were discussing the Guardians, and you and I both kind of agreed that we thought that there could potentially be some sustainability for them sticking in the rotation if they were able to, you know, sort of kick to the curb Zach Plesac and his underperforming status quo. And then if they were, you know, Peyton Battingfield, and what are they going to do with him? And they put him in the bullpen. Cal Quantrill, he's kind of on the fringe right next after Plesac. And then Savali and McKenzie are still on the IL. That's kind of what we look at, though, or what I look at least, when we look at a rookie pitcher and how much we're going to be bidding up the upcoming Fab. Because that's the big question, right? Is what are we going to spend? And what are we going to get? That's kind of what that's the big thing with giving an analysis, I guess, with a rookie pitcher is, are they worth it or not? Because Tosh Bradley, I still think he's going to end up being worth it. And Tanner Bibee, you know, if he sticks, he's going to be worth it. And so whatever you are spending is eventually could be worth it. But I know each rookie pitcher isn't the same. Mason Miller is not the same as Tosh Bradley and Tanner Bibee. There's a difference between each one, you know?
And by the way, it was something that was shared with me, I guess, beat writer Zach Mysel. He wrote, Shane Bieber, Cal Quantrill, Logan Allen, and Tanner Bibee are in Cleveland's rotation. Who's the fifth starter? Zach Plesac and Peyton Battingfield through side sessions. Terry Francona said they want to go over the plan once more before they reveal it, but they like Xavion Curry in the bullpen. So that's good. That's a good sign.
Very good.
The way, the Logan Allen bid, some of those, I mean, he had the nice start over the weekend, but it was a little higher than I expected. I saw some high 100s, low 200s. It was interesting.
You ever seen the t-shirt that says, who has two thumbs up and it's whatever underscore. And it's like, this guy, that's me for Logan Allen, 169 and 180 in two main events.
You got him. I'm that guy. You got him in two.
I got him.
And I think people know my story, at least if you follow me on Twitter. I ended up on Tanner Bibee everywhere. I got him on the auction, super auction. I got him in two main events. I got him in a couple of OCs and some of those by a few dollars. So I kind of just, and the funny thing is I kind of wrote up that I was going to
do. Are you talking about your 25%+ keep them honest bids?
Yes. Yeah. People making fun of me for it, but yeah, I mean, I guess that's what it was. It was one of those where I put him in high at what I think I could win him at. And at some point I was like, well, I'm going to go back, you know, as I always do. And I cut down my bids and my prices. And I was like, you know, I'm going to put it in a place where I just can't get them. And then the devil on my shoulder was like, fuck it. You know, it's wrong. I just think it's wrong. Especially when when I saw him get, that comebacker, I was like, there it is. That's why, because it just takes one moment and all your money, all your hard work all season long, you blew it on this, this one player. It's just the fact that it's one player. It doesn't matter who the player is. And the fact that it's a pitcher pitching every 5 days, You want to balance it where you don't want it to be like, because your ratios are getting wrecked in April, like this one guy isn't going to come and save you. And there were like 99 reasons for me to not do it and not try to win them. And then that one reason, and it's like my, undisciplined self pops out and gets them. So, I mean, let's hope he's like George Kirby was last year and is dominant.
Listen, to be fair to you, even though I was giving you shit like other people were, because some people were like, well, keep him honest, but it could be 3 to 8%, right? That's a perception. You in your Fab article had north of 31%, I believe.
I had up to 315
So you went under that. So you weren't on the high end on what you were kind of projecting, I guess we could say, or what thinking. And obviously there's going to be bids up north of that. You're going to get the outlier 40% and 50% bids.
Yeah, there was a 50.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get that. Yeah. Zach Waxman's actually been doing a really good job, and I've been giving him credit each week on the Monday pod. Just scraping all the data, and he lists, each league, each main event manager, and how much, those big fish were added for in Fab. So, I think 504 was the highest number for Bybee this upcoming week. And then now we're going to have a little bit of Gavin Stone. Oh, it was.
Yeah.
I love seeing that. Even if the player works out, I'm like, okay, I'm willing to have you have a good player for 50%. Go ahead.
Go at it.
Have him. Yeah, have it.
and by the way, absolutely. That is some really good work there by Zach Waxman. So that's really nice to see. And then of course,
I love looking at that thing. Yeah,
it's good. It's really good. And then of course, Todd Whitestone, one of our very own, an FTN main event player, auction player. He does a really nice free article. I'm sure most people have seen it, but it comes out on Mondays, and he does an accompanying podcast. It's usually pretty quick. It's 15, 20 minutes. So make sure you give it a listen. He really dives in. Like if you're into like, kind of the main event world. And it really is like, the best of the best, I think, player wise. It's really interesting just to see how people are doing. And of course, like just not a surprise whatsoever that I think I saw is like John Posma, Hall of Famer is like one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He's like in first place in four of his five leagues. And granted, it's only the beginning of May or whatnot, but that's exactly the type of player you don't want to, be first place in your league. If you're in his league and he's already off to a nice start, that's not something really you want to be doing, be dealing with.
Insert the Forrest Gump on the boat waving gif, because that's me. I had Posma in a Vegas main event last year. I'm in a Vegas main event with Posma again this year. He's in, no surprise, first place in that league. It is a competitive league. Rob DiPietro's in it. Dan Semsel's in it. There's other good players in it, obviously, as well. But, John is off to an incredible year. And he, like a lot of players, a lot of successful players, you keep a tight core of, you have your fades list and your targets, et cetera. And then being able to stay on top of everything, that's where John really, really becomes elite. The in-game management week to week, setting lineups in Fab, it's just truly impressive. So, kudos to John. It's always, it's nice to see him, but then it's always kind of unfortunate when you're in a league with him, because he is a fucking shark.
He is. He really is. The Houston Astros rotation. So I was just looking at it. If you go to Roster Resource, there are only three guys in their starting rotation right now listed, because unfortunately, I think we all saw Jose Urquidy got hurt in the Sunday night game. Now he's dealing with some shoulder discomfort. It looks like whatever it is will not be a minimum IL stint. And then the Luis Garcia, 8 pitches into his start on Monday. Unfortunate to those for those of us that have had him for 2 steps this week. He was pulled after those 8 pitches, dealing with elbow discomfort. We're still waiting on some news there. Funny, those are two guys that of all my fantasy teams, I almost have none of them, but I got both of them on, I think, the last main event I did. They were just guys that, when you're in that pitching frenzy and you need somebody, I think it was like in the 150s, 160s. I was like, oh, everybody I liked is taken. Hey, Luis Garcia pitches for the Astros. He's decent. Let's take a shot there. So I'm just unfortunate. Those three guys are out. So what are they going to do with the rotation? They called up 30-year-old Matt Gage. He's a lefty from AAA. So he's somebody that somebody was asking me if he was going to be in the rotation. I'm going to have to dig into that and see. I believe Brandon Belak, old friend Belak, kind of we've done this before, right? Like where an Astros starter gets hurt, He comes in from either from his middle relief, or he's like a bulk middle innings, middle reliever, multi innings guy, or coming up from AAA, and then he'll have a great start. And then when you actually pick him up for Fab, he destroys you. But he's he looked good, 75 pitches on Monday, stepping in for Luis Garcia. But they're in a pickle. You know, Lance McCullers isn't coming back anytime soon. I just had a thought, man. Abreu time? Can they stretch him out? Can they do that?
I don't know.
They talked about it preseason.
That'd be interesting.
It just came to me right now.
Yeah. Well, so we're still a little bit of ways from Lance McCullers. So we know that he'll be the fourth piece at some point, right? So we can kind of pencil him in the foreseeable future. At least hopefully so. I know that he's ramped up just a little bit, throwing off the mound, 20 plus pitches, etc. So then he's gonna, you know, face live hitters, then do rehab, etc., and then he'll get going. Bit of ways away from that though. So yeah, what do they do now? Forrest Whitley, that's one I think that's gonna end up getting bumped here pretty soon. And then you mentioned kind of Belak could potentially be an option. He pitched four innings in relief when Luis Garcia went down the other night. You're going to miss that two-step because Garcia is already on the IL. But Belak did have a 35% strikeout rate in those four innings. It was against the Giants, and it was only four innings. But I don't know.
Six Ks?
We're going to have to wait to see. Yes, yeah, six Ks. We're going to have to see what they do. But it will be interesting if Forrest Whitley is one of those pitchers. And then
that's right.
If he's part of this whole Gavin Stone and Taj Bradley and Bivey and Allen and Miller and list is going on and on.
Well, I've got like between 400 to like 550 left, and we're just starting in May.
You're so rich.
I just have to deal with the boys that I have. I'm you know, no more shopping for me on rookies. That's the other thing this past weekend. You kind of really had to make a stand, right? Because we know, even the disciplined ones of us and undisciplined, we know all these other guys are coming up. I believe Yuri Perez from Miami had like 11 strikeouts in his outing today. Like so many great studs that we know are coming up. Ricky Tiedemann at some point, Matthew Liberatore for the Cardinals. Like, you know, these are guys that are going to get into the rotation, are going to be good. And the decision had to be made. Am I going to go after and spend a nice chunk on a Bibee or Logan Allen? In some cases, even Louis Varland, people were spending up on him. And forego, you know, some of the ability. And you can't also spend all your money on rookie starting pitchers, right? Like, you might need a closer at some point that comes up.
What if you need, how about a hitter? Yeah, like what happens when Christian Encarnacion comes up, man?
Strand?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like that's
maybe,
like,
you might be planning 70. A seat there for people to spend more than they want to now. I was thinking like it'd be decent. Now you're making me think he's like a $200 guy.
70 grade power is pretty good, and you know, it's
a good name part too.
That he's going to be going in, and yeah, the Meatball Mafia, they call him CES.
That's what I call him. I'm not invited to the Meatball Mafia. Yeah, although I was born in Rome, I don't know if those guys were fucking born in Italy. But I was born in.
That's cool.
Not that Roma, motherfucker. Sorry, you can edit out my cousin.
So the big thing here is hitters. We haven't seen the Juan Soto, Tatis, Acuna, or whatever you want to call the big hitter. CES, right? Is one of them. It could have been Anthony Volpe. So whoever that may be, I'm not the deepest of knowledge of all the rookie hitters that will be coming up, but we still have that, you know, string and list and pool of players that are going to be coming up as well. So yeah, we've got a long way to go. We're in week 6 of 27.
It's a long ass season. All right,
and I'm already tired.
I know it's like 3 hours past your bedtime, Maddie.
Laker game tonight, baby. We're up.
You're not making it through the first quarter.
Message me at half and see.
I will. Let's talk starting pitchers. Rest of the season, top 10. We spent some time digging into this. First of all, I wanted to mention, just looking at the overall players in terms of fantasy value so far this season among the starters, and this is through games through Monday's games. We're not counting Tuesdays. Obviously, those are still going, but Gerrit Cole, who actually pitched and pitched decently, I think gave up a couple of runs, but he's third overall on the Razzball Player Rater. And there are two other guys in the top 10. One is Clayton Kershaw. He's seventh overall. And Zach Gallen, who is also pitching on this Tuesday night, is eighth. So those are your top three starting pitchers through the first almost five weeks of the season. Shohei Ohtani, just pitcher alone, is 12th overall, which is fantastic. Spencer Strider, despite a little bit of a blow up this past week, leading the league in strikeout rate, 41% among starters. He's 18th overall. And then Sonny Gray is sixth. He's got an ERA under one. He's 21st. His teammate Joe Ryan is seventh. Shane McClanahan, eighth. Justin Steele, ninth. And then Kevin Gausman, coming off that career high strikeout game, he's 10th. So those are the top 10 starting pitchers. Before we kind of dive into last season and our pitchers, any general thoughts about this group? Surprises, no surprises?
No, awesome stuff. And we're going to get into, you know, a few more. But the one thing I would say out of all those guys, if we were to just take a mulligan, right, from obviously you can't in real life and statistics. If you were to take a mulligan from each of these starting pitchers that you did mention, Kevin Gausman would pretty much be blowing everybody out of the water. And it wouldn't be kind of even close if you took away that one inning from Houston. It would be interesting. Well, I guess Strider's bad outing against the Mets would put him pretty close. But yeah, Gausman to me is the one that stands out, as if he just took away that one inning where they just sort of just sat on everything and waited. He's on fire.
You love him.
I love him. I love him, baby. That's all I'm getting to. That's all I'm getting to.
I know what you were trying to say. Yeah, you just made up some stat. You should see his triple F.
Yeah, he's just awesome, you know? It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. I can't wait to see where he is in your top 10. But I wanted to mention kind of what a different landscape this league was this time last year, because as we all remember, it was a very down year for hitting. All the pitchers seemed to be blowing up. We remember all the pitchers going past 250 and all the fab guys that were just not only that got off to a great start, all the Nestor Cortez's, Tyler Anderson's, Kyle Wright's of the world, but a lot of those guys, Gonsolin, they stuck for most of the season. They were great values. A lot of these guys end up being top 25 starting pitchers. Now it kind of has a different feel because of the massive offense, and we haven't even gotten to the warm months. Usually April's kind of a slow start for hitters, good for pitchers, but it's been a bloodbath, at least for me, and I know for a lot of other people with starting pitchers. I'm sure there are some people that have a lot of fantasy teams where they just kind of, you know, dance through raindrops and have avoided it. It's like they got that perfect mix of, Strider, but with picked up Wade Miley at the right time and, you know, just kind of avoided, you know, some of these blowups. But nevertheless, there aren't really all that many. If you're looking at the top guys, there are almost as many starting pitchers qualified that have an ERA under three last year as there are this year. So this year, so far, there are 26 starting pitchers with an ERA under three. They're qualified. Last season, there were 28. So really not that big of a difference. This year, though, or last year was a lot more of like kind of the predictable guys. Your Rodones, McClanahan, Verlander, Scherzer, Gausman was there. There weren't that many surprises. This year, there are a lot of those fab guys or those late guys. Like I mentioned, Wade Miley, Eduardo Rodriguez is off to a phenomenal start. Bryce Elder, Graham Ashcraft, who was a late draft season surger. Josiah Gray in the middle of a breakout. A newly revived Drew Smyly. Anthony Discofani is having a good start to his season. So, you know, you got some of those late guys. I don't have all that much faith in a lot of them all going forward. I think we'll have a couple of guys that kind of have either resurgent seasons or breakout seasons. But for the most part, these are guys I don't have all that much confidence in. But just, you know, super quick, last season, some of these guys that were off to tremendous starts, I'd mentioned some, but a couple were interesting. So one was Kyle Wright. I think we all remember that he had the velocity spike in the spring training and was just, you know, he's great off the top, ended up winning, you know, leading the league in wins, 21. But also, I don't know if you remember this, but Joe Ryan was phenomenal last year in the first month of the season. He was a top 10 starting pitcher. And there were two starting pitchers with ERAs under one through their first five starts. So I was basically looking through the end of April. One was Logan Gilbert, who I believe only gave up like one earned run or two earned runs in his first five starts. And then Jorge Lopez at the time with Miami. So both those guys were dominant. And they did end up with, you know, ERAs like in the 3.2, 3.6 range. But just interesting to know, just looking at this season, at this point of the season, the beginning of May, compared to last season, beginning of May.
You meant Pablo Lopez.
But what'd I say?
What you're saying. Jorge.
Oh, I did.
Jorge. Yeah. So do you think, okay, so let me ask you actually, after doing all of your research there, out of all those pitchers that are having that early season success, do you think any of them could be Kyle Wright, Tony Gonsolin, not Spencer Strider? We'll kind of exclude him because he was on a different planet. Tyler Anderson, right? Do you have one that you think could end up being just even one?
Well, I think most people would say or like Ashcraft.
Okay.
I don't think that's my guy. I know he's got the velocity spike. He's been looking amazing. If you don't mind, I mean, this kind of ties into something I tweeted about yesterday, which was about a specific stat I look at that's on FanGraphs, and it references FIP, which, as we know, is kind of our least reliable, least sticky indicator. Fielding independent pitching, but it's, you know, you've got XERA, you've got Sierra, you got FIP, XFIP, and Sierra, right? Maybe I mentioned at the beginning, but there's a stat that is E minus F, which is basically ERA minus FIP. And although FIP isn't, the greatest indicator on its own, I do like to see the differentials between ERA and FIP. To me, it's important. One of the reasons was, you know, last year, we were just talking about Logan Gilbert and Joe Ryan. At the end of April, they were the guys with the two largest differentials of ERA and FIP. Both had ERAs like under two, but their FIPs were closer to like, you know, four basically. And you just knew that there was some, there was going to be some regression, some pull towards that. But we can't just look at a list. You can't just go and sort by E minus F and just, you know, kind of go with it. You have to dig in further. You have to look at those other indicators. I think BABIP and strand rate is another thing, you know, left on base percentage. You look at those things in relation to that. Like, for example, Sonny Gray's got he's been super lucky. I think like a very low BABIP and a 91% strand rate. So you just know he's not going to have, I mean, common knowledge, which is just like, you know, common sense would tell you he's not going to have a 1.5 ERA. But also, you know, maybe he's not a 5 ERA guy, right? Like we've seen him be decent in the past. But those indicators with the BABIP and all those things kind of tell the story of what is more likely over the course of the season. Some of that regression pull.
Yeah, I wish you wouldn't. I wish you wouldn't have used Sonny Gray as the example, because I do think he's going to ball out sustain some of the success. Not obviously at this level, but something close to. He looks really fucking good. But I do get what you're saying, and I don't know if we can take too much from that and use it as a predictor as to how much we're going to sustain with those guys you mentioned, though.
Like which guys?
The players that you mentioned that are starting off on the hot
Miley,
start.
Erod.
Yeah.
Well, like, okay, Graham Ashcraft is a good example. So great velocity, you know, huge velocity.
I'm not buying into him.
Well, yeah. Well, so yeah, let me tell you, you got the huge velocity spike. He's looked great, looked fantastic in the spring. Dude throws heat, but just by the numbers. Okay. Eye test. I understand you. I get it. Not you, but you know, people that are Ashcrafties. A 2 ERA, basically a 2.10 ERA. His XERA is nearly 4. His FIP is nearly 4. His XFIP is 4.5. And his Sierra is 5. And then, you know, you kind of look at some of the other, then you can look at his strand rate. You can look at his BABIP. I think the strand rate is high. Maybe the BABIP is, you know, whatever. And then you think about just common sense. We haven't even warmed up yet. It's going to be a hot summer in Cincinnati. And, you know, and it's the biggest hitter's park in baseball. And these offenses are going to heat up. So not seeing Graham Ashcraft isn't in the midst of a breakout. But what is that breakout, right? Like if he ends up with a 3.5 ERA, I would be ecstatic. but it's not going to be anywhere close to a 210 that he currently has.
So if you were in a Yahoo, ESPN, CBS, Home League, Trade League, etc., would you look to potentially sell high?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I concur. I agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so okay, then you can do that. But what I'm saying, you can do that exercise with like this entire group. I would, you know, you would look at their ERA
in relation
to their other 4-5 indicators, look at their strand rate, look at their BABIP, look at, you know, velocity increases, consider park context and all these things, right? Because there was a time when Wade Miley was a decent pitcher. We know Eduardo Rodriguez had promise. You know, Josiah Gray was a big Dodgers prospect. Like, just unfortunately, he's on a team that, you know, not really providing him run support. But yeah, it's just a fun exercise to do with all these guys.
Yeah, I think it's important to spend time, especially even when going into FAB, when looking at a veteran potentially, when you're looking to add somebody. There is a lot of stuff that you can kind of, what did they say, pop open the hood, you know, and look underneath that. So, that's a fun exercise. Name your top 10, your top 10 rest of season starting pitchers.
All right. So my number one, if I had to say one guy would be the best pitcher from this point on to the rest of the season, I would have to go with Spencer Strider.
And I agree with that as well.
Yeah, that's my number one. I guess we can trade off a couple at a time. But my top three are Spencer Strider. I think Gerrit Cole is number two, and then Shane McClanahan. I really love number three. You know, great offense, lots of run support. Impressive, actually. I was noticing he's got the second highest swinging strike rate in baseball, behind DeGrom, and actually slightly ahead of Strider, but. I think he hasn't even been performing to his potential. I think he's going to be one of the lowest ERAs in baseball this year and easily have over 230 strikeouts.
Yes. I actually have, like, I'm kind of sad I missed out on him. So the injury that he had in the second half, being on the Rays, there was some kind of, you know, those couple of just, it only takes just a little bit to make yourself kind of out on somebody that's going with high draft capital, right? It only just takes a little bit. Because if you're as high as I am, because my number three, we both agree, Strider and Cole 1-2. My number three is Kevin Gausman. Duh, surprise, nice. Surprise. And just a couple things that differentiate or what as to why I would take Gausman over McClanahan would be the lower walk rate. You've seen more longevity in innings pitched. And then this year, it's like, how can Kevin Gausman get any better? Last year, he had a 24.4% strikeout minus walk rate. How can you improve on that when you're only walking less than 4% of batters? Like, how? Well, you've got to spike that strikeout rate of 28%. How do you do that? He gets to 35%. On a 40% usage of the splitter. Do you remember the steroid Roger Clemens days on the Yankees when we thought his splitter was just the nastiest, filth? His usage on that, Roger Clemens, his usage was 29% total, so 11% less than Kevin Gausman is using this year. And his strikeout rate was about 10% lower than Kevin Gausman. So we're basically seeing Roger Clemens on steroids on the Yankees times two, like a monster is what we're seeing out of Kevin Gausman. And he's on the Blue Jays, and I think that they're going to go to the fucking World Series. And I mentioned on our starting pitcher or Bold Takes podcast or whatever, I think he's going to win the AL Cy Young, and I'm riding it. We're going for it. So yeah, Kevin Gausman, splitting hairs, McClanahan, you mentioned the swinging strike rate, which is just absolutely elite. If he stays healthy and we do see a spike in innings, he could potentially finish as number one overall, right? I get the McClanahan love as well.
You mentioned Roger Clemens. I'm going to say something here embarrassing. And maybe half of the people didn't know this, but you know, the diehard fantasy folks do. I was watching the Philadelphia game yesterday, the Phillies, and I did not realize that left-handed batter, Cody Clemens, is Roger's son. I did not know that.
Dude, and he came in. Okay. So, Texas, I'm a USC fan. The Vince Young, Matt Leiner, Reggie Bush years, that like made me hate Texas. I don't really have like a hatred towards Texas, though. It's just really that.
You Clemens mean University actually, of?
Yes, state, yes. Right? University yeah, of yeah, Texas. Yeah. Yes, no, yes, yes. No. I've had good times in the state of Texas. Clemens actually hit either one. He definitely hit one and potentially two home runs. One was off Phil Maton right off Christian Javier was yanked out of release, a relief. Clemens hit a home run in Houston as a Philly. And then I think he might have hit a home run the day after as well in Houston. So visiting on the Phillies, hit two home runs in Daddy's old, not park. Did he ever pitch in that park in Minute Maid? Maybe. He might have. Either way, his old team. So yeah, Colby Clemens did hit a couple home runs, at least one against the Houston Astros last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're not impressed with that.
No.
And you didn't even know he was this kid. Yeah, he did. I don't know. It was either one or two. I can check real quick, but no. Yeah, it's not that exciting, obviously. You're
no, next thing.
It was back to back. So he went one. Yeah, he hit two home runs in Houston.
He did. Nice. Now, I was just thinking of our boy Yancey Eaton, who I know is a dedicated listener to this podcast. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because I remember some comment or tweet or something he made about, and it's made me self-conscious ever since, about the loud clicking of mouses or keyboards, like while you're recording a podcast, right? Like we're supposed to be professionals or whatever. And I was just thinking, I have this like giant new keyboard that I got and I've been clicking on it. And then I'm like, fuck, Yancey's going to be on. Oh, so no. I just moved it.
I haven't
it out
heard
of the
it.
Way.
I haven't heard it at all. So I haven't heard it. So if
you know, he's
I,
right,
if
you shouldn't be. You shouldn't hear outside sounds
sure.
in a podcast.
Well, if I'm not picking it up with my headphones, I don't think the listeners will be able to. So you should be fine. And I think I called Roger Clemens' son Colby Clemens. I might have said that. It's Cody Clemens.
Cody.
Just Cody.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Always.
Give him
always.
Shout out on home runs.
Podcast rule number one: always repeat the name. Yes, Yancey Eaton. Doesn't like keyboards clicking on the T. So next, let's go.
Can you hear when I click?
No, not really.
No? Okay, because I'm clicking all the time.
No, but, you must
okay,
have
move on. Yeah, let's get to the last seven.
All right, yeah. Because you got all the fancy, you know, Apple, like light, you know, touchpad keyboard. You probably think something and then it just like types it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My next three is number four is Shohei Ohtani. I actually think that as long as he's healthy, he's going to continue to dominate, be an amazing pitcher. It'll be tough decision for teams going forward. Sometimes it's kind of straightforward when you should be starting him as a hitter versus pitcher, but then it's like your own fantasy team's context that you need to consider. I don't think there's like one size fits all for him, but I do think he's going to be among the top five starting pitchers for the rest of the season. Then I got Corbin Burns five, and I figure at this point he's not going to be on a lot of people's top 10 lists. And you're looking at his indicators in relation to his current 4 ERA. There isn't a lot there to make you think that he, you know, it's all, you know, going to be his same old dominant self. But call it gut, if you will. I think Corbin Burns is going to be just fine and be a top five pitcher rest of the year. And then Kevin Gausman is my six. So I'm with you on there. Not quite as bullish as you are because I think he's kind of caught in this glut of other starting pitchers that can be there right there with him. But he is my six. Who are your four, five, six?
My 4-5-6 is Luis Castillo, Zach Gallen, and Christian Javier. And instead of boasting about them, I kind of want to mention as to why I don't have Ohtani and Burns in my top 10. Ohtani's walk rate is getting far too high for me. It's above double digits now, and we've kind of seen that cause some problems, like in his last game against the A's, although he was getting hit hard after the delay. And then with Burns, I don't have any Burns, and I'm not dancing on anybody's funeral or coffin or grave or whatever, but we did mention on the starting pitcher podcast or episode that there was a dip in strikeout rate, right? When we do have a fall off of 5%, that is substantial, even though it's high and you're still seeing a 30% strikeout rate last year. The strikeout rate did decrease. The walk rate did increase, and we are now seeing that again this year. The strikeout rate's obviously decreased quite a bit. It's under 20% at 19.7%, and the walk rate's still okay at 8%. But then when you get into some of the other metrics, like the swinging strike rate, he's just about average right now at 12%. That's a cause of concern for me. And then the in zone contact, he's giving up 87%. And last year that was at 83%. And if you look at the second half of the, of last year of 2022 for Corbin Burns, that contact rate was even a little bit higher. So things have just been trending in the wrong direction for a little bit too long for me to be in on him right now when we're seeing some of the stuff from these other guys.
So, yeah. And the other thing I try to do in this exercise is not be too overly over analyze this last month, right? Or like, mm-hmm. because it's very easy. We as humans is like, you know, for example, like I've got Gallen next. He's my number seven. He's really close to Gosman.
Beast.
And then he just gave up three earned runs today, right? So, I mean, that could be a reason alone subconsciously to like bump him down too. But I'm trying to think of the body of work, the pedigree, the, you know, the expectation over the course of the season, team context, like all these different things in my rankings. I'm trying not to let like, you know, super small samples affect me. But yeah, Zach Gallen would be my number seven. Yeah. I think he's going to be among the league leaders in strikeouts, kind of where he is now. As long as he stays healthy, I think he's going to be legit. I think Arizona's legit, so long as Corbin Carroll's healthy. So he's my seven. I like Luis Castillo there. I know you've got him, you know, there at the top. I think he's an absolute beast. This is the true breakout year. Yeah. I know he's been great before, 200 plus strikeouts, but this is the year for him. So he's eight for me. And then, I mean, right, I'll just end my
I love that one.
Yeah, he's your four, right?
No. I'm talking about the one you're about to say, number nine.
Oh,
I just
yeah, Clayton Kershaw, number nine. By the way, Rob Silver had a tweet, I think, in the preseason, right before the season started, that he would not be surprised if Clayton Kershaw won the Cy Young. And obviously, I have, you know, a lot of respect for Rob and his opinions. He's always like, you know, just kind of like a forward thinker and outside the box thinker. And I'm like, the only thing, I mean, I got some Kershaw on OCs and wherever I could get them, but I'm just like, you know, I'm always thinking of like innings limitations, right? Like I just, you know, is he, they're going to give him a phantom IL stint at some point. They're going to manage his innings. They want to get him into the playoffs and everything, but it doesn't matter. The body of work, like when he's pitching, he's elite. As long as he's healthy, he's fine. So he's the nine. My 10 is Joe Ryan, who pitched another gem on Tuesday. He is my favorite. And I've been a Sonny Gray stan for years, since the A's days. And I like Pablo Lopez. He's good. But I think Joe Ryan is like a certifiable ace. And he's the one guy that I truly am bummed that I missed out on. I know Scott Jenstad was a big fan.
No shares.
I have some Joe Ryans, but not anywhere.
Super like a four honey OC, like where are we at?
50, yeah, like DCs and an OC. I do not have them in mains.
Okay. No, I don't have them in a main either. I got them in a four honey and it's a good four honey. So I'm kind of like trying to, you know, get excited when he starts, right? You got to find a reason to, you know, get excited when some of these guys go. So you look at your teams and kind of see, you know, what sort of amount you have invested in them. I love the Joe Ryan call with Clayton Kershaw. For me, he's not in the top 10. I have four pitchers after I mentioned my top 10 that I just kind of wanted to throw a bone at and give an asterisk to. But yeah. So for me, my four, you said Castillo, Gallen five, Christian Javier still six for me. We're starting to see the spike out rate climb. And the walk rate is truly elite. So I think that once we see the innings build up a little bit even more, we're going to see higher than what he did last year. I think the full body of work is truly going to be elite. I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up beating Garrett Cole and Kevin Gausman to win AL Cy Young still as it is as of right now. So at the beginning of the year, I think Cole was like 8-1. Gausman was 16 and Javier was 16. Javier is probably north of 20 now. I would still throw a little bit of coin at that. Shane McClanahan, so we've already discussed him, but he's number seven for me. Joe Ryan's actually eight for me. I'd love for him to be a wing. If I was single, Joe Ryan would be the guy I would choose out of all these dudes to be my wingman as well. And then Logan Webb, number nine. Dude, I think he could end up being in this tweet. I mentioned a tweet. It was, I fucking don't have the qualifier. I don't have it up. It was having a strikeout minus walk rate north of 25%, which is rather impressive, right? And then a Sierra under 3. And the top four were, I believe it was Strider, Cole, Gossman, somebody else really impressive, and then it was Logan Webb. And the big knock on Logan Webb going into the season was, well, look at his strikeout rate. That went down, and that was really it. That was kind of the production that you didn't get from Logan Webb last year. A 20.7% strikeout rate just isn't going to get it done at an elite level. And then so you're only going to have a K minus BB of 14.5%. So for me, looking at that, it's like, oh, well, I'm out. But he's a bulldog. He's a fucking absolute bulldog. He throws 192 innings last year. His BAB is right in line with pitching at 293. So you don't have to think of anything being funky one way or the other there. He allowed a 266 average. He throws a 1.15 whip in 192 innings. You know how valuable that is? I know you do, but like 192 innings of a 1.5 whip. So that was where it really stood out to me was, okay, and then the year before he had a 1.16. The year before that, smaller sample size, 1.11. So then you go, how does he increase on these things? You look at his usage and everything in between, and he fucking finally does it, and he figures it out. We have he's really got it going. So a 34.6% O swing rate, that's great. We love to see that. Strikeout rates at a new career high at 28.9%. He's now cut his walk rate. So the command and control on all these pitches and the usage is awesome at 3.4%. He's in the top five with a 25.5% K minus BB. We've already seen 190 plus innings pitched, which is fucking awesome. I think that he can sustain this. We've seen it in 6 games started now. And if you go to his game log, it's just been rather impressive. The high of 50% again at Yankee Stadium, strikeout rate, 32% strikeout rate, etc. So Logan Webb, and then Pablo Lopez. And then I wanted to give a shout out to Sonny Gray, Nate Eovaldi, Clayton Kershaw. And then out of all these guys, the asterisk and number one when he returns in mid-May is Jacob DeGrom. So fuck you haters. Yep. Vlad, let's get out of here.
Yeah, DeGrom will be back soon. He should be. I mean, if he wasn't on the IL, he'd be like, you know,
number one.
2-1, yeah.
One.
Real quick on Logan Webb, XFIP, basically half of his actual ERA, worth noting. And same with the Sierras, like in the high twos. So, and obviously the walk rate. So he's great. And then Christian Javier is going to have, I'm still waiting for the like string of like 13, 14 strikeout games. Mm-hmm, they're going to come at some point. So I love him. He's great. That's a great top 10. And that's a fun one to do. Maybe next time when we have a list like this, we'll go backwards. We'll make it more fun. I didn't even think about that.
It is, but it's my fault because I'm like rushing us to get out of here. The Laker game is beginning, and we've got to go. We got to go.
Let's go. Matthew Batty Wood Davis. I'm Vlad Sedler. Wow, you're pumped up. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.